parts of their counties. Julie Yurko, the chief executive officer of the Northern Illinois Food Bank, said up to half of her current clients have never sought help before. In early January, we had a white minivan pull up with three kids, 5 years old and younger. It ran out of gas sitting there, Yurko said. The mum was sobbing and her beautiful children were sitting there watching her. Kelly Sirimoglu, spokesperson for New Jersey's Center for Food Action, said the stigma around seeking help can be worse in wealthy areas. She said some people tell her, "I never thought I would be in line for food." Advocates said the reluctance to seek help means the need is likely even larger than it appears. Katie Wilson of St. Charles, Missouri, said she heard about a food pantry run by the St. Joachim and Anne Care Service from a friend of a friend. She almost didn't go. The single mum of two children, 11-year-old and a 9-year-old, lost her job as a hotel auditor in June and tried to squeak by without her income for 2 months. We found ourselves in a situation where it was a heat or eat kind of thing, said Wilson, a 42-year-old, describing having to choose between heating her home or buying food for her children. It took me looking around and saying, "There's nothing to eat." As hunger has become more visible in the United States, donations to food charities have risen. But they don't address the core problem of an infrastructure that doesn't match the new need. Some pantries are often just a few hours a week in church basements, a far cry from those that operate regularly and look like supermarkets. Many small pantries struggle to shift to outdoor food distribution during the pandemic or find new helpers when the few, often senior volunteers, felt unsafe doing the work. "It definitely is harder in these places," said Yurko, whose food bank distributes to Kendall County, Illinois, which has just 3 pantries for its population of 129,000. The safety nets are not as robust. A strong safety net also requires pantries to cooperate with one another and a broader array of local social services. "That's been happening for years in Flint, Michigan," said Denise Diller, executive director of Crossover Downtown Outreach Ministry, which runs a pantry in Flint, Michigan. Agencies and community leaders banded together in 2014 when lead poisoned the drinking water. "When COVID occurred, we were already kind of ready," Denise Diller said. "So was Atlanta. As in Flint, Michigan, hunger was never hidden there. 15% of children in Fulton County, which includes Atlanta, Georgia, faced hunger before the pandemic. After COVID suspended volunteer shifts, the Atlanta Community Food Bank asked the Georgia National Guard to help sort, pack, warehouse, and deliver food to help meet the needs of the estimated 22% of children experiencing hunger. The food bank also partnered with 7 school districts on more than 30 mobile pantries. Such coordination and connections were lacking in Bergen County, where 80 pantries worked mostly in isolation when the pandemic hit, County Commissioner Tracy Zuhr said. "They weren't collaborating. They were going along the same path they had for decades," she said. "That was this need to break out of the old way of doing things and work together to be more impactful." Tracy Zuhr spearheaded the creation of a food security task force in July, reaching out to municipal and faith leaders. Goals included feeding people, connecting them to other services, and turning some emergency food programs into fully fledged pantries. "Building an infrastructure is painstaking work and ongoing work," she said. Now Tracy Zua says pantries are starting to share with one another. When one gets a large donation of perishable items, such as eggs or milk.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. This radio show is about Islamic lifestyle, and in each episode, we will be talking about a different lesson. Please stay with us till the end of today's program. Today's lesson, the social system and morality of Islam. An important hadith saying of the Prophet is that religion is not what one formally or ritualistically practices, but how one deals with others. This is what religion is. Religion is all about your social and public dealing. It is therefore not sufficient to be pious without performing deeds which demonstrate one's beliefs. Your beliefs and your actions, they have to be in sync. Your actions have to speak for your beliefs. It is a proof of your beliefs. It is reported that Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam once entered a mosque and saw at prayer a vulnerable and venerable old man with a long white beard. He was told that the man was in the mosque all day long, worshipping and dispensing the words of Allah to others. The Prophet then asked how he earned his living, and was told that a merchant, not known for his piety, supported him. The Prophet remarked that of the two, the merchant was indeed the more worthy. Brothers and sisters, Islam is a religion that is all-encompassing. Islam doesn't tell you to go worship while your responsibilities that Allah has put on your shoulder are not taken care of. Islam does not ask you to go do those additional worships. And we're, of course, not talking about the wajib here. You know, wajib namaz you have to do, wajib salat you have to do. We're talking about those recommended and long prayers and, you know, worships, acts of worships. If your responsibilities, your socio-political responsibilities are not taken care of, Islam does not encourage this type of worship. Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are discussing the social system and morality of Islam. When we talk about morality, the first thing that comes to mind are those like ethics, you know, the way we carry ourselves, the way we talk to others, the way we use those pleasant words and, you know, terminologies like welcome, thank you, and all those things, right? But we're talking about the social morality system of Islam, which is very ingrained and interactive with the society. Every Muslim is the recipient, guardian, and executor of Allah's will on earth. His responsibilities are all-encompassing. a Muslim's duty to act in defense of what is right is as much part of his faith as his duty to oppose wrong. Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam once said, "If someone among you sees wrong, he must right it by his hand if he can." When it's said by his hand, deed, conduct, action, all of this is by his hand. Now, the tradition continues. If he cannot, then by his tongue, which means he speaks up, verbally oppose it. Then the third level is, if he cannot, then by his gaze, silent expression of disapproval. And the fourth level is that he still cannot do what we just mentioned, then in his heart. The last is the minimum expression of his conviction, faith, and courage. This is what's required to lead such a life where your social system and your moral compass and moral standards, they become in sync. Okay? This is what the ideal system Islam proposes for every Muslim. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
One day after a spring break, oasis of South Beach descended into chaos, with the police struggling to control overwhelming crowds and making scores of arrests. Officials in Miami Beach decided on Sunday, 21st of March, to extend an emergency curfew for up to 3 weeks. The police fired pepper balls to disperse crowds after an 8 p.m. curfew went into effect on Saturday, 20th of March. Local Miami officials said people had flocked to the city of Miami because of its relatively few coronavirus restrictions. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalists Neil Vigder and Azzy Pabara. The piece is titled "Miami Beach, Overwhelmed by Spring Break, Extends Emergency Curfew." Stay with us for more of Neil Vigder and Azzy Pabara's article. One day after the spring break, oasis of South Beach descended into chaos, with the police struggling to control overwhelming crowds and making scores of arrests. Officials in Miami Beach decided on Sunday, 21st of March, to extend an emergency curfew for up to 3 weeks. The police fired pepper balls to disperse crowds after an 8 p.m. curfew went into effect on Saturday, 20th of March. Local Miami officials said people had flocked to the city of Miami because of its relatively few coronavirus restrictions. The officials there went so far as to approve closing the famed Ocean Drive to all vehicular and pedestrian traffic from 8 p.m. up to 6 a.m., the hours of the curfew, for the 4 nights a week through 12th of April. Residents, hotel guests, and employees of local businesses are exempt from the closure. The Strip, frequented by celebrities and tourists alike, was the scene of a much-criticized skirmish on Saturday night, 20th of March, between, at times, unruly spring breakers who ignored social distancing rules and wearing face mask guidelines, and police officers who used pepper balls to disperse a large crowd just hours after the curfew had been introduced. The restrictions were a stunning concession to the city's inability to control unwieldy crowds of revelers, and the city and the state of Florida aggressively quartered amid the continuing coronavirus pandemic. I believe it's a lot of pent-up demand from the pandemic and people wanting to get out, and our state has been publicly advertised as being open, so that's contributing to the issue, David Richardson, a member of the Miami Beach City Commission, said on Sunday. In an emergency meeting, the commission approved maintaining the 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. curfew from Thursday, 25th of March, through to Sunday for 3 more weeks, which is when spring break typically ends. Officials also kept in place bridge closures on the nights of the curfew along several causeways that connect Miami Beach with the mainland. The city's decision to send police personnel in riot gear into the South Beach Entertainment District on Saturday, 20th of March, only a few hours after the curfew was announced, came under heavy fire, especially from local black leaders. They noted that many of the spring breakers who had been dispersed were young African Americans. It's the same group of kids that are in South Padre Island right now, except those kids happen to be white, said Stephen Hunter Johnson, chairman of Miami-Dade's Black Affairs Advisory Board, referring to the popular spring break destination in Texas. Mr. Johnson said the city did a poor job of rolling out the curfew and enforcing it. This entire economy thrives off vacation, he said, but when you have kids that feel as if they're being over-policed or policed differently, in an environment post-George Floyd, where we don't shirk back from that, but we confront it head-on, this leads to situations where the police officers feel understandably like they're being put in an unfair situation. The 8 p.m. curfew on Saturday, 20th of March, in the city's South Beach Entertainment District was initially put in place for 72 hours. On Sunday, 21st of March, Miami City officials voted unanimously to extend the emergency declaration until Monday, with the city manager empowered to extend it again. The governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis, a Republican, has touted his state's lack of pandemic restrictions compared with other parts of the country controlled by Democrats. If you look at South Florida right now, this place is booming, Mr. DeSantis said recently. Los Angeles isn't booming. New York City isn't booming. Miami-Dade County, which includes Miami Beach, has recently endured one of the nation's worst outbreaks, and more than 32,000 Floridans have died from the coronavirus. The state is also thought to have the highest concentration of B117 variant, the more contagious and possibly more lethal virus variant first identified in Britain. Some blamed the unusually large crowds on a spring break season supercharged by a pandemic that has limited socializing. Mr. Richardson, the Miami commissioner, said what Miami Beach was facing is far greater than spring break, and that's why we are experiencing the large number of crowds that we are. Ricky Ariola, another city commissioner, said at the meeting, "Shutting things down cannot be the way the city does business. It is embarrassing, and it just shows we don't know what we're doing." Ricky Ariola also said that as the city is grappling with one holiday, it needs to start planning for another. "We've got caught flat-footed this spring break, and we're going to walk right into the punch of Memorial Day weekend." Businesses about 30 miles north in the city of Fort Lauderdale are monitoring the developments in Miami Beach. "We've been watching it very closely," Dan Lindblade, the president and chief executive of the Greater Fort Lauderdale Chamber of Commerce, said on Sunday evening. "We'll do everything we have to do to make sure we don't have the same situation happen up here." Fort Lauderdale dealt with similar spring break problems in the 1980s and early 1990s, until the city and businesses decided to make some changes, he said. One major change: hotels started charging more money for rooms. The effect, Mr. Lindblade said, has been notable. "It's a family-oriented atmosphere, and that's been great for our economy," he said.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the pit.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islam ID. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all of time.
By the first verse of the Holy Quran.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Allah will bless you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Protect you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Help you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
So ask His blessings.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
His protection.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
His help.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Assalamu alaikum warahmatullahi, brothers and sisters. Welcome to a new episode of Youth Station. I am Abu Muhammad with you, and today with me we have...
Assalamu alaikum warahmatullahi, brothers and sisters, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, other life forms. I am Zainab.
If you want to take over, you should have done it from the beginning, Sister Zainab.
No, I just want to interrupt you because you were doing such a good job and I didn't want to be like overshadowed by you.
Thank you for that. That was not helpful. Okay, since you want to talk, let's talk about news, okay?
Oh no.
You said some time ago that you don't listen to the news.
I don't.
Right? How can you stay in touch with what's happening in the world if you don't follow the news?
And that's a very interesting question. You know what the answer to it is?
You don't keep up with what's happening in the world.
Yeah, okay. I don't care. Exactly.
You don't care.
I don't care to keep up what's happening
then
in the world.
Then I can conclude right now that you're not a Muslim. Because the Prophet says whoever wakes up in the morning and doesn't care about the state of the Ummah is not a Muslim. Now, how do you defend yourself, Sister Zainab?
Well, I don't need to receive information regarding the Ummah I'm living in through news, per se.
But you don't know what they're going through.
I have connections. I have my people. I have...
And what do they tell you?
Send help. Houston, we have a problem.
Okay. So you're getting news through different means.
Yeah, I would say you're not watching mainstream news. Because it's gloomier than I am, and that's saying a lot, you know?
Yeah, I agree with that, with a few hours with you here.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and also, the other thing about the news, especially mainstream news, is that it is not authentic, it's not genuine, it's not honest to the...
On what basis do you say that? That's quite a
big
claim.
...full level of what I would demand news to be.
On what basis? Like,
on
you can't just
basis.
Throw things out on,
well,
on public radio
okay,
and then...
Okay, so there's absolutely no Western news channel that I trust, first of all.
Okay.
They all have propagandas, they all have agendas, they all have political bias, they all have some sort
no,
of
you have,
benefit
you have
that they
some
are trying
of them
to
that
read
are not.
Through
like
the
Fox
news.
News, come on, how is Fox News biased?
I just wish people could see the expression on our faces right now.
Okay,
I'm
sorry,
giving
that was
him
a
that
joke.
Look, and he's doing that smile, which is like, yeah, I know what I said, I take it back this very moment. And then there is the not Western news, which I still feel that people aren't... I mean, they have inclinations, all right? And
obviously.
I don't trust inclinations.
So it's you don't trust anybody but yourself,
yeah.
Which sounds like a good thing. But then again, you said people give you news about what's happening in the world. At the end of the day, you are getting news somehow. You are getting to know about the world around you.
But it's, you know, but it, I can still regulate who those people are and how they,
okay,
the
so
news
wha-
that they
so
impart affects me.
Okay, so what you're talking about basically is you want to get news in a responsible way.
Yeah.
You don't want to just accept everything
and
that is being said.
And regarding things that I actually care about, bro. I mean, I am concerned about the Muslim Ummah. Wallahi, I am.
Okay.
But
you don't sound like it, but go on.
Yeah, I know. It took me years and years of practice to come across as this nonchalant, but I think I pull it off quite well. But there are certain news that are important, but since I cannot do anything about it, I choose not to hear about it. Like, I can know... No, no, no.
The least
it's
you can do for someone is to feel bad for them.
No, thank you.
Of course.
Okay? Like,
that's
for
called
the
empathizing.
Longest time,
and empathizing is the least you could ever do for someone who's suffering. If you don't empathize for someone who's suffering, then basically you're not caring about them.
Okay, listen.
And you cannot empathize for someone if you don't know what they're going through.
I know that there's a devastating war going on in Yemen, and it has been going on
okay.
for like... 6-7 years now, right?
Okay.
That's all I need to know. I don't
okay.
need...
And human beings generally forget, if they have a general idea of something and they're not keeping in touch with something, it just becomes a long-lost memory that doesn't have any emotional effects anymore. If you watch the news, I'm not saying every single hour, every day, even if it's once a week, if you get to know what's happening there, then not only do you know what's happening and you can really feel that pain once again and be... empathize with the people suffering, that's one. And secondly, which is more important than just simply empathizing, which as I said is the minimum amount, is that you need to know what's happening so you can take the right stance. If you don't know what's happening,
the right
possibly
stance.
Those Yemeni people deserve to die.
What?
Maybe
they deserve
how
to die,
do you
but
know?
No one
how
deserves
do you
to be
know?
Starved to
one
death.
One second, how do you know if you're not watching the news?
Bro.
If you're not thinking about things, if you're not watching what's happening, then... On what basis can you take any stance? I'm glad I've made an impact.
Maybe they deserve to die, not that they do, because I really believe that no human being is allowed to make that judgment
obviously,
toward another.
Obviously, I'm with you on that. That nobody deserves to die. But if you're not going to watch the news and know what's happening...
My stance is always against those who are starving other people to death, okay? I don't care who the starved party is, and I don't care how wrong they were. No human being is allowed to starve another human being to death. That's all I know. Okay?
Sure. Fine.
So if even
but,
if
but
one
you,
day,
how
even
do you,
if
how
one day...
Okay, so the stance you've taken right now is that you are against XYZ country and you believe what they're doing is wrong because
yep.
they're making Yemenis starve. How do you even know they're doing that? How do you know Yemeni kids are dying every day out of... lack of food and nutrition out of health.
I have friends who fled the country because of
the maybe they're all lying. Maybe it's just like a plot.
Then if you're going to be nihilistic
exactly.
about it all,
no,
then
so that's what
no
exactly we're doing.
That
basically, there, ladies and gentlemen, the right stance to take when it comes to news, okay?
All right, yeah.
the rational thing to do when it comes to news is to know how to analyze your news, is to know how to decipher between the facts and the analysis, the biased analysis. If you don't have any facts in your hands, then how are you going to take any stance? How are you going to even empathize for someone? You don't even know anything is happening to them because you don't have the facts. At the end of the day, you need to have facts. When we watch the news, because we should and have to watch the news, we should learn to watch it responsibly, to learn how to decipher facts from opinions, but also more importantly, to learn how to decipher real facts from fake facts.
Absolutely.
Right? So one is what you said earlier, that there are a lot of sources that we don't even trust. For example, we had some news outlets, for example, that claimed that after a particular attack, there were no casualties, okay? Zero casualties. Obviously, we're going to take that with a pinch of salt because that many ballistic missiles in an area would not leave no casualties, right? So there seems to be a bit of hiding of facts over there. So we need to go to the news, but in a responsible way. But I disagree with you. I can empathize with you again now that I have the information. I can empathize with you when you say that when you see the suffering of these people, you feel really bad and become depressed and gloomy. And yes, that's there for any human being that has an ounce of humanity in them. But then that's part of the struggle, that why should they struggle on their own? You also struggle with them. At least in your heart, you feel for them. Right?
Well, you never know that I don't.
You cannot sympathize and empathize towards something which you don't even have a connection to.
You've heard about them.
Well, how long has been the Yemen war?
I'm saying that you don't know about the connection that I could have with the Yemeni people and how.
Yeah, but if you don't hear about their suffering regularly, you're going to forget
about
it.
You don't know about that
it.
Either, right? I'm just saying, bro.
I'm
just saying that I do not listen to mainstream news. That does not mean in any way that I don't receive and collect information
about
important things that are going on in the Muslim society. My question, however, I honestly don't care about the details. I don't care. I could be wrong.
Who makes the
news, though? And what have you been doing? Now, I'm thinking that you follow up on the news, right?
No, I actually do follow the news. Again, to a limit to the amount I feel is necessary.
What
for
do
me
you do about it?
What do I do about it?
You follow the news and then what?
The least I can do is to empathize with it, with what's happening. I analyze things, so I know, I try to see who's right, who's wrong. I try to see what needs to be done so that if I am able to do something, I do it. Mm. You see? Often, we don't know that we can do something because we don't know what's happening. Yeah,
where are the sources that you feel that, all right, this is a reliable source, I can collect my news from
them? Okay, so this is where I agree with you, that there are very, 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 very few sources that I would rely on and, you know, take everything they say. What I do, this is how I go about news, is I look at different news outlets that actually are, like, completely extremes and against each other. Mm. So, for example, I'll take, for example, very liberal news and very, very conservative news. And then I would see, firstly, for example, what facts are they both giving? What opinions are they giving? And then I try from these things, from different factors, to decipher what are the facts and what are the analysis.
Mm.
And then with the analysis, I just throw them in the bin because I couldn't care less what these journalists think.
Yeah, definitely.
What I care about is the facts. And then based on my own worldview and my understanding of how things should be, I then analyze the facts myself. Mm-hmm. Right, so this is how
and
I go
how
about
has that
it.
Helped you in any way in that's helping the situation?
That's helped me in helping the situation from different perspectives. Mm-hmm. So, for example, as a student, one of my biggest goals is to help people intellectually and rationally.
Yep.
So when I understand what's happening in the world, when I see where there's oppression, who is in the right, who is in the wrong, then I can then educate people to understand who is in the right, who is in the wrong.
Okay, that's because important.
Because then they will end up having an impact. So I may not be an activist in the front line, but I may be able to influence an activist in the front line. But how can I do that if I don't know what's happening in the world?
Definitely.
And this is really important. This is why I think we should all watch the news. We should know what's happening. People are clueless of what's happening. It's really sad.
It really is sad.
So, yeah. And every country you live in has its own politics. It's good to know the politics so that you at least you're aware. You don't get caught up in the dirty business. And sometimes the right people are labeled with wrong labels. Mm. And because you're not aware of the politics, you don't realize that the wrong things.
Yeah.
Like, I'll tell you one thing. This has really happened. In my first or second year in Qom, one of the students told me, don't go to Ayatollah Misbah Yazdi's Durus.
Mm.
Okay? I don't call Ayatollah Misbah Yazdi Marhum because I believe he's always alive. So Ayatollah Misbah Yazdi is one of the great philosophers, one of the great scholars, spiritually, philosophically, like, he's just a gem. And I remember I used to go to his classes, and then a student, a foreign student, told me don't go to his classes because he mixes spirituality with politics. And at that point, I was like, oh, really? What? Like, that would be interesting. That stirred me up more. I was like, I have to go and see what's happening there. So that didn't work from his perspective. But now I went backfired. There, and I saw that, no, he doesn't mix politics with spirituality. He talks about Islam, the pure Islam, and then talks about certain things that, yes, when they're put in a political atmosphere, they would have certain importance and impacts on how politicians do certain things.
Yep.
Right? So he's not directly criticizing a political party. He's talking about certain ethics, which, for example, some politicians don't stand by, and therefore sounds like a criticism on certain political wings.
Definitely.
There you go.
And it's actually very important. I totally disagree with... I'm not a very political person myself, mostly because I don't care, but I don't agree with people who say that we should separate between state and church and that spirituality has nothing to do with running a country. It has everything to do with running a country. The person who ran the country was a prophet.
Was a prophet.
All right? Yeah. End of discussion. Yeah. That's all the time we have
for
today's
show. And that's why you should also care for politics. Thank you very much, brothers and sisters, for being with us today. Hopefully you'll have a better view on politics and you'll give a lot of importance to it whilst also reading the news and watching the news responsibly. Until the next episode, thank you very much, sister, for the interesting views and discussion. Until the next episode, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I am what I am because you made. I have what I have. My love is strong because you are the one I call creator, my Alpha and Omega, my protector and my maker. Because of you, in weakness I am braver, my defender. Abiding in silence with patience and guidance, aware when I need you, a light when I seek you, justice, forgiveness, the strength in my weakness, and my love is strong.
In the limelight.
By promoting fossil fuel projects overseas, especially gas infrastructure, the United States is making it harder for countries to decarbonize. Han Chen, manager of energy for the International Program at the Natural Resources Defense Council, said in a statement. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Jake Johnson. The article is published under the heading, More than 430 groups from six continents demand Biden end all U.S. subsidies for global fossil fuel projects. Stay with us for more of Jake Johnson's article. A coalition of more than 430 environmental organizations spanning 53 countries have recently called on the Biden administration to quickly cut off all U.S. public financing for fossil fuel projects overseas and work with governments around the world to bring about an end to taxpayer subsidies for the dirty energy sources driving the global climate emergency. We urge the Biden administration to act swiftly to end new financing for all parts of the fossil fuel supply chain, including for gas. Stop new U.S. fossil fuel support within 90 days across all government institutions, and work with other nations to end fossil fuel financing, reads a letter sent to top Biden administration officials, including Secretary of State Antony Blinken, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, and Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm. Signed by 432 environmental groups from six continents, including Africa, Asia, and South America, comes weeks after U.S. President Joe Biden delivered a speech at the White House condemning handouts to big oil and vowing to work with U.S. Congress to eliminate subsidies to fossil fuel industry in the United States. Governments can't claim to be serious about climate change if they pump billions of dollars into the most polluting industries every year, said Alex Dukas of Oil Change International, one of the signatories. If President Joe Biden is serious about zeroing out emissions by mid-century or even earlier, the U.S. must end its billions of dollars in support for oil, gas, and coal projects around the world. Arguing the United States' action to end public funding of fossil fuel infrastructure could spur other nations to follow suit, the new letter urges President Biden to follow through on his initial steps towards launching a whole-of-government approach to tackling the climate crisis. The groups point to Biden's January executive order directing federal officials to craft a plan aimed at promoting the flow of capital towards climate-aligned investments and away from high-carbon investments. Despite the need to rapidly reduce fossil fuel production and use, G20 governments have provided more than three times as much in public finance for fossil fuel as for renewable energy every single year since the 2015 adoption of the Paris Climate Accord, the group noted. U.S. institutions such as the U.S. Export-Import Bank, EXIM, and the U.S. International Development Finance Corporation, DFC, have provided billions of dollars for new fossil fuel projects annually, together averaging $4.4 billion per year over the past decade. The good news is that by acting decisively, the letter continues, the Biden administration can accelerate a global shift away from public finance for fossil fuels. The coalition proceeds to lay out its desired timeline for action from the Biden administration. Develop plans for ending fossil fuel finance across all institutions as soon as possible within the 90-day time frame. While the executive order does not specify a deadline for Treasury to develop a strategy on the use of voice and vote, or a deadline for the specified agencies to articulate a plan to promote ending international financing of fossil fuel-based energy, we ask the strategies and implementation plans regarding voice and vote and international diplomacy also be completed within a 90-day time frame, similar to what was specified for other areas such as the development of the climate finance plan. Clear Treasury guidance on the multilateral development banks should be released as soon as possible in order to establish the U.S. position ahead of the Asian Development Bank's forthcoming energy policy review, with a draft policy due to be released within weeks. Have all measures take effect soon after the completion of the plan, while also seeking comment on ways to strengthen the plans further and to conduct a public consultation process aimed at ensuring the outcome is as ambitious as possible. By promoting fossil fuel projects overseas, especially gas infrastructure, the U.S. is making it harder for countries to decarbonize. Han Chen, manager of Energy for International Program at the Natural Resources Defense Council, said in a statement. Han Chen added, "We have to stop subsidizing fossil fuel companies at the expense of our climate."
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of a speech delivered on February 22, 2021 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the chairman and members of the Assembly of Experts. The meeting was held at the end of the eighth session of the Assembly.
For example, the Islamic government is faced with conditional pressures imposed by the enemy. In such situations, we notice that the cure for this is to act on this ayah. Therefore, stand firm on the straight path as you are commanded, you and those who with you turn unto Allah. This is a public matter, not a personal matter. In the Holy Quran, the terms patience and stand firm sometimes refer to the Holy Prophet himself, not people. For example, the ayah, but for your Lord's cause, be patient and constant. Chapter 74, verse 7 is addressed to the Holy Prophet, but in this case, it concerns people as well. Therefore, stand firm in the straight path as you are commanded, you and those who with you turn unto Allah.
Your light and love, all I see, nothing more I'd ever want or need. My Lord, protect me from dishonor, grant me faith to be stronger.
Everyone should stand firm and resist. In other words, it asks us to make a public move showing patience and standing firm. Therefore, we understand from this ayah that in such circumstances, we should act like this. Therefore, stand firm in the straight path, or accept such as have faith and show patience and constancy. We should show patience and encourage one another to stand firm, to resist, and to have patience and constancy.
این خب وقتی یه چنین چیزی پیش میاد برای ما اون مفهوم فستقم کما امرت و من تاب معک کاملا روشن میشه قبل از این خیلی مفهوم روشنی برای ما نداره
So when such an issue arises the concept of therefore stand firm in the straight path as you are commanded you and those who with you turn unto Allah becomes completely clear to us before the emergence of such issues it is not completely clear to us
Alhamdulillah, Alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah. Alhamdulillah, Alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah.
Around the world with reporters.
The first summit between China and the United States since the election of Joe Biden produced an unexpected and extraordinary diplomatic blow-up. During opening remarks, top U.S. diplomats tried to present China as a global threat, airing a litany of complaints about the way China's government and political culture differs from the West. That breach of diplomatic norms led to an hour of public arguing, which saw China's top diplomat, Yang Jiechi, point out that the U.S. was, quote, massacring the people of other countries and, quote, toppling regimes through the use of force. Yang called the U.S. the champion of cyber attacks, noted that blacks in the U.S. are slaughtered, and asked the U.S. to, quote, stop advancing its own democracy in the rest of the world, a democracy which Yang said many Americans no longer have confidence in. The summit may come to be viewed as the beginning of a new geopolitical era defined by Chinese confidence.
A lot of the, you know, ruling class in the U.S. is very used to thinking of China as like this poor, dominated country that in recent decades has just been a source of cheap labor. And they're really frightened that this country that should have been, you know, dominated and defeated is, you know, standing up as a world power.
Just prior to the summit, Biden placed sanctions on 24 Chinese officials, which may have been designed to end any chances for cooperation even before the meeting began.
The Obama administration's pivot to Asia policy shifted the Pentagon's planning from the Muslim world to China. Biden has continued with an openly antagonistic approach, which rejects Beijing's call for cooperation amid the multiple global crises.
I just think there's so much opposition to cooperation and so much support for a new Cold War that even if Biden wanted to cooperate with China, he couldn't. Like, Trump wanted a peace deal with North Korea, a much less, like, strategic threat to the United States, and Trump wasn't able to get that through.
The talks concluded without the issuance of a final joint statement. Experts in both nations say few should expect a significant improvement in bilateral relations between the two superpowers. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
Oh.
For decades now, people of Kashmir haven't witnessed any celebrations. The conflict in the region has always spoiled their joy and happiness. However, when it comes to Nowruz festival, which marks the beginning of spring, hope for a better tomorrow gives people of this war-weary region a chance to rejoice. Now people have gathered in the heart of Kashmir's capital city of Srinagar, where almond trees are blossoming to mark the arrival of spring.
People of Kashmir have nothing to rejoice, and we have faced turmoil for decades. But when we see the cycle of life in nature and how life is revived, I and many like me begin to revive too. We only hope to have a spring year round, since we have missed it for decades.
Youngsters are busy clicking on images and filling their social media timelines, while others are enjoying the beauty of fresh blooms. And to add to this glory, Kashmir's administration has organized a concert.
Spring will soon begin, and we wanted to start on a happy note. We want people of Kashmir to be full of hope, energy, and enthusiasm, so that this energy boosts their morale throughout the year.
Nowruz, a Persian tradition of welcoming spring, became part of the culture of Kashmir after Persian scholars and saints came to Kashmir and preached Islamic teachings centuries ago. Since then, Kashmir and Persia have shared many similarities, including food. Here at the Little Persia, friends and families have gathered in Kashmir's only Persian food-serving restaurant to celebrate the occasion of Nowruz. The owner says the practice aims to retain the fantastic culture of Persia through food.
I came back to Kashmir like 7 years before. I noticed, I was always intrigued by the cultural similarities we have with the Persian community, or per se like the Iranian community, or with Iran. So I noticed those similarities, and I dwelled in the history and in the books of, like, you know, of a tradition. And then I got to know, like, you know, we were one of the tribes that actually came from there, and then we settled here. So our culture is, like, majorly influenced and pretty much originates from that part of the world.
Picturesque Kashmir, known as the Venice of East, attracts tourists from around the globe. However, decades of turmoil and now the COVID-19 pandemic have pushed the region's economy to its ever lowest. Nowruz symbolizes hope, revival, and life. People of Kashmir say no one other than those suffering in this world would realize the importance of a new beginning, and they only hope to see their spring season last long. Shahana Butt, Indian Administered Kashmir.
The 6th of Shaban is the title of the latest retaliatory attack carried out by the Yemeni army against one of Aramco oil sites in the Saudi capital Riyadh using drones. The Yemeni army says the operation comes in response to the Saudi continued deadly aggression.
The Yemeni army will continue its strategic operations deep inside Saudi Arabia until the sources of oil dry up. And Aramco, the source of Saudi economy, is destroyed. We will force the Saudi enemy to realize the reality of our capabilities. These operations will continue until the war is stopped and the blockade imposed on our country is lifted.
The Saudi regime confirmed the attack, saying it has caused a fire in the oil refinery in Riyadh and it was controlled. Observers say the Yemeni army should continue such attacks to deal heavier damage to the Saudi economy.
These operations will not have an impact unless the oil facilities are continuously attacked. The oil is the lifeline of the Saudi economy, and Saudi Arabia is using oil money to buy mercenaries and weapons. So these operations must not stop.
For 6 years now, Yemenis have been under a devastating war imposed by Saudi Arabia and its allies that caused the death of tens of thousands of people. Many of them are women and children. Riyadh has also forced an all-out blockade on Yemen, which has caused more deaths than weapons had.
Yemenis say the army has the right to continue targeting Saudi facilities until Riyadh stops its years-long war and siege against them and releases the illegally detained oil ships. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
For the past 15 years, these shanties have been the new homes of Rohingya refugees. A scattered community dwelling here with no proper sanitation facilities and unhygienic conditions. To them, what matters is to survive, and that's all they've been trying to get. Escaping persecution at the hands of authorities in Myanmar, the Muslim Rohingya community has been fleeing their homes for safer locations. But decades have passed, and they still have no place to call home.
A decade ago, we left Rakhine because they were mercilessly killing people from our